In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, amen. It's good to see so many of you, and I'm happy that those who are here with us chose to come and pray rather than, you know, partake in what's going on outside in the streets. I'd like to speak today about, and I'm glad if everybody, if you guys want to come up to the front, maybe we can be a little bit more informal. But I'd like to speak about Halloween and an Orthodox perspective of Halloween. But just before we begin, I'll give some little bit of background information, and maybe this might clue us in as to why this holiday is so popular here. Today in America, Halloween is the second most popular holiday after what? Christmas, absolutely. After Christmas. And you know, here in the U.S., there's over $15 billion spent a year for Halloween. $15 billion. So certainly this is something that the industry is very interested in. And we'll speak about this at the end, because this $15 billion will encourage them to make it a $16, $17, $20, $25 billion industry. And that's why you'll find, even in, when you look at Christmas as well, you'll find that the decorations and the lights get more complex every year. Something new has to come out. You know, first it was just the regular lights, then it was colored lights, then it was the flashing lights, now it's the lasers. So everything's got to come up to charge more and to make things a little bit more extravagant. And not only is this a big time industry, but there's a lot of confusion even among the Christians themselves about the validity of this holiday and whether or not we should participate in the holiday. There's a famous Christian actor. If you have really good eyes, you can see at the bottom there, I put the quote or the reference. I'll leave his name out for now. But listen to what he says about Halloween, and listen to the confusion that it might cause. He quotes, and this is from the Christian Post. He says what? Early on, Christians would dress up in costumes as the devils, ghosts, goblins, and witches, precisely to make the point that those things were defeated and overthrown by the resurrected Jesus Christ. And he continues and says, "You should have the biggest party on your block," he told the Christian Post. "Halloween gives you a great opportunity to show how Christians celebrate the day that death was defeated. And you can give them the gospel tracts and tell the story of how every ghost, goblin, witch, and demon was trounced the day Jesus rose from the grave. Clearly, no Christians ought to be glorifying death, because death was defeated, and that was the point of All Hallows' Eve." So although this might look very nice on the outside and might convince some people, but if you look at this, it's not accurate. He makes, and maybe in the first part he says, that early on Christians would dress up in costumes and devils and goblins. There's actually nowhere in the Christian tradition in the church where we would dress up as demons to proclaim that Christ defeated the demons. This heck, it doesn't even make any sense. Why would I dress up as something bad, the opposite of good, to say that Christ defeated them? And then he says, to celebrate the death, the day that death was defeated. What day was death defeated? The resurrection, right? He trampled down death by death. For the resurrection actually is this day. Certainly not Halloween. So what is the background? Where did this holiday come from? The history of Halloween starts with an old Celtic holiday called, it's spelled S-A-M-H-A-N, but it's pronounced Samhain. It's not Samhain, it's called Samhain. Okay, and Samhain was the Celtic lord of the dead. And it literally means summer's end. So this is kind of like a festival where they would be at the end of the harvest, and they're preparing for winter, which is the time and symbol of death, right? So they believed that during this transition from the harvest, from life, and the beginning of winter, death, that the realm of the evil came very close to the earthly realm. Let's listen to what the Encyclopedia Britannica says about it. It says, in ancient Britain and Ireland, the Celtic festival of Samhain Eve was observed on October 31st. So what day was Samhain feast? November 1st, right? It says the eve is the 31st, October 31st. At the end of summer, it was the occasion for one of the ancient fire festivals when huge bonfires were set on hilltops to frighten away evil spirits. The souls of the dead were thought to revisit their homes on this day, and the autumn festival acquired sinister significance with ghosts, witches, hobgoblins, black cats, fairies, and demons of all kinds said to be roaming about. In addition, Halloween was thought to be the most favorable time for divination concerning marriage, luck, health, and death. So he says, they said during this time is where the dead souls would revisit earth. So the people who were in the graves would come up and visit, you know, the people here. And this is actually what they say are the ghosts, right? The ghosts are the ones who are the dead that come back and visit and roam the earth. And then they said that this was the most favorable time for divination. Divination here is when I call upon the demons to give me your access to the past, or to ask them for marriage, luck, health, and wealth, things of the world. Then it continues and says what? Samhain was one of the most important and sinister calendar festivals of the Celtic year. At Samhain, held on November 1st, the world of the gods was believed to be made visible to mankind, and the gods played many tricks on their mortal worshippers. So actually, these demons were considered at the time, of course, this is talking about hundreds of years before Christ even, thousands of years before Christ. It was a time fraught with danger, charged with fear, and full of supernatural episodes. Sacrifices and propitiations of every kind were thought to be vital, for without them, the Celts believed that they could not prevail over the perils of the season or counteract the activities of the deities. Samhain was an important precursor to Halloween. So we see it came from a pagan root, in which they believed that having this festival will help fend off the evil demons that were coming and roaming the world. Then it was further developed after that, after the Romans came into Britain and Ireland and they conquered that area. As with any nation conquering another, things tend to blend together. Right, and an attestation to that is the United States. We're one big melting pot. So people that come from different countries will come and bring their culture here. Most other countries, when you go there, you have to assimilate with that culture. But in America, they don't require you to assimilate with any culture. You can form your own culture. So you can imagine when the Romans went in into the Britain and Ireland, the festivals meshed together. And at the time, almost every culture around the world had a Day of the Dead in which they would have a memory for those who were departed. The Romans had two feasts of the dead. One was called the Pomona Day and the other was Feralia. Feralia was celebrated on February 25th, and of course it was marked with drunkenness and fornication and the like. And actually, if you look at the adult side of Halloween here in America, this is what it's filled with. You find that Satan wants to prepare the children in accepting Halloween and then make the adults fall into dissipation and fornication and drunkenness. So if you ever go out and you ever see the costumes for adults in the supermarkets and things like that, you would know exactly what I'm speaking about. The day, Pomona Day, was November 1st, was a day to honor the goddess Pomona, the goddess of fruit trees and fertility. And guess what her symbol was? It was the apple. Her symbol was the apple. And I'm not going to mention it today, but just food for thought, the game of bobbing for apples came from this as well. I'm not saying not to bob for apples, but just something is for historical. Then, once the Rome adopted Christianity and it became the religion of the Roman Empire, the Catholic Church modified some things. So, having, just like the Coptic Church, all the churches in this area suffered severely from Diocletian. Rome was not excluded. There are Christians everywhere at the time. So, just like our church, the Church of Rome and Greece and so on, they had many martyrs. And just like us, they would have a day for each martyr. And then they found out that this was got to be too many martyrs to commemorate. So they said, let's set a day exclusively and call it like All Saints or All Martyrs Day. And this is where the term All Saints Day came to be known. So with the backing of the Roman government, it was decided to whitewash the Roman days of death and turning it into the days of remembering the departed saints. So they wanted to get away from Pomona Day and Feralia and say, let's make it Christian. We remember those who are martyred and died for the sake of Christ. So the name was changed from Feralia to All Saints Day, and the date was changed basically to kill two birds with one stone. Then on May 13th in 609 AD, Pope Boniface IV dedicated the Pantheon. You know the Pantheon in Rome? This was a pagan temple. He dedicated it and made it now a church, right? He made it a church in commemoration of the Virgin Mary and all of the Christian martyrs. But this was on May 13th. So then what happened from May 13th and how did it come to November 1st. So the Roman Feralia Festival was a major pagan festival where the heads of households would rise at midnight to exorcise the ghosts of their ancestors and fathers. This date was possibly chosen to Christianize and depaganize the already popular Feralia Festival. So that day of May 13th was already the Feralia Festival. So, and this was very popular at the time. So, they made this new festival of the Saints' Day to be on this May 13th to replace, or to attempt to replace, the pagan festival. Then All Saints' Day was later changed by Pope Gregory the IV and further established by Pope Gregory the VII. So now we're talking about the 11th century. And they changed this date to November 1st to coincide with the other Samhain holiday that was already being celebrated, again, to try to eradicate the pagan practices and the pagan feasts. Along with All Saints Day, they also had what was called All Souls Day. All Souls Day. So in 988 AD, the Catholic Church added another day, which was November 2nd, to remember and pray for all the souls who were suspended in purgatory. Of course, purgatory is a place or something that we don't believe in as Orthodox Christians. It's a place that's kind of like a halfway house between hell and heaven. So the people who didn't live up to standards would be put in this place called purgatory. They'd suffer for some time, and then they'd be able to go to heaven afterwards. We can speak about this, Yanni, at another time, but we don't believe in this. So they had 3 days. They had the Eve of, they called All Hallows Eve, which was the 31st. Then they had All Saints Day on the 1st of November, and then All Souls Day on the 2nd. And till this day, in some areas, on this All Souls Day, they believe that they can pray for their departed while they're in purgatory, so they can go to heaven. So they actually go to their grave sites, as you see, or try, maybe you can see in that picture. They go to the grave sites and put candles there in front of their graves and pray for them. So then in All Saints Day to Halloween, in 1556, the Scottish term All Hallows Eve was used, and then by 1745, the English pronounced it Halloween, and that's what we have till today. So what are some of the origins of some of the customs that we see today in our culture? Let's take costumes, for example, the wearing of costumes. In the Samhain festival, the Celtics would wear animal skin and dress up like goblins, ghosts, demons, fairies, and the like to trick the wandering spirit into leaving them alone. So the demons would come around, and if they saw you wearing something similar to them, they would leave you alone, right? But again, as we know, this is not the way, and as the person was the Christian actor was expressing earlier, that he was saying that this was some of the Christians did. But of course, Christians know better, right? Because, you know, the Bible tells us not to be overcome by evil, but overcome evil by what? By good, right? So good overcomes evil. And with the cross, Satan is terrified at the cross. So we don't need to dress up like them to try to imitate them. And just as a side note, Kida, for yani, I'll mention actually this point at the end. Let's continue. So this is where the costumes came from. They would dress up and try to frighten the demons. How about trick-or-treating? It says in the custom of the Samhain festivals, families would put food and treats outside of their front door to appease the roaming spirits so they do not play evil tricks on them. So these spirits would go around and play evil tricks and scare the people and haunt them. So to try to avoid this, they would give them candies to try to appease them, or food and try to appease them. Later on, actually, what happened is what some of the poor people in these neighborhoods would actually dress up as demons as well and go and collect the food from these houses. And if they didn't, they would play tricks on them. And even till this day, you'll find, you know, this is a day where it's very popular. I don't know, maybe here, but back in Florida, some obnoxious kids would do this. They would egg houses, toilet paper their front yards, and things like that. So all of these things, they would do it on Halloween. And they probably do it and don't even know where it came from. But that's certainly where it came from. How about the jack-o'-lantern? Right, this one's a bit more interesting. So there's a story or a folklore or a fairy tale about this guy named Irish Stingy Jack, who actually makes a deal with the devil, and he tricks the devil to go up a tree. And when the devil goes up the tree, him being a Christian, he makes a sign of the cross on the tree. So now the devil's stuck in the tree, and he can't come down. So the devil says, "Let me down." He says, "No." He says, "Let me down." He says, "Okay, I make a deal with you. I'll let you down only under one condition, that if when I die, you don't come after my soul." So he says, agreed, both agreed. So then Jack, foolishly, he erases the cross. Satan comes down. The guy lives his life and dies. And then after he dies, his soul's not going to heaven because of the way he lived in his life, so God closed heaven on him. And then hell, he came to the gates of Hades, or hell, and Satan, he wanted to come in, and Satan said, "No, I'm not going to let you in because I'm going to keep my word." Immediately, you know this is a fairy tale, right? Because Satan keeps his word. The Bible tells us that Satan's a liar and the father of lies, right? So this is just a made-up story. So he sends him on his way. While he's going on his way, Satan takes a coal and he throws it at Jack. And Jack happened to be eating a turnip, or had a turnip in his hand, and the coal went in the turnip and sat there. So he had this turnip that was bitten out of, and now there's a lighting coal in it. So he would say that he would roam around, you know, the world, because he couldn't go to heaven and go to hell, so he would roam around the world with this lit turnip in his hand. So this is where they say where the jack-o'-lantern came from. So it's a big fairy tale that makes no sense, but this is when people make these things in front of their houses. This is where they came from. So what about a Christian response to all of this? I'd like to read for you a passage from Deuteronomy, chapter 18. It says what? When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. So God has taken the people of Israel, his chosen ones, into a foreign land, the Canaanites, who practiced similar things as, and maybe worse, as the Celtics did. It says, there shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or a soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. So he's saying, all of these, I don't want you to have anything to do with. And this point here about making their sons and daughters pass through fire is because the Canaanites at the time would actually offer their children as sacrifices to their gods. And there's an ancient story again, quote me on its accuracy, but they said, you know, bonfires, you know where it came from? It came from bone fires. And what they would do is, these Celtics, they would offer animal sacrifices, take their bones, and sometimes even their, you know, children, kill their children, and then take their bones and make a fire and burn it as a sacrifice to their god. I'm not saying, again, not to do bonfires and have a fire and things like that on camping trips, but again, this is where things are coming from. So God tells them, I don't want you to have anything to do with that. Then he continues and says, for all who do these things are an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out from before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God, for these nations which you will dispossess listened to soothsayers and diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. So he says, the reason why I'm giving you this land is because these nations have done these things. So this was a reason for the Canaanites to be judged. And because of this, God instructed the Israelites, when they went into the land of Canaan, to judge them and kill them, because this was God's judgment on them. Of course, this idea of ghosts and things like this roaming the world, this goes against what we believe as Christians about the living and the dead. It says the ancient Celts believed that during the Samhain festival, the spiritual barrier between the living and the dead was at its thinnest, so that the evil spirits of the dead returned to earth to wreak havoc among the living. So they felt like the two worlds came the closest. The division was the thinnest, so they can cross over very easily. Of course, Christian theology rejects any belief in ghosts. What are ghosts? Ghosts are different than demons. Ghosts are the spirits of the deceased who come to earth to haunt the earth and to scare the people, right? This we don't believe in. So ghosts are human spirits that return to earth to haunt people and cause turmoil. Listen to what St. Anthony the Great said about the demons. He says, the demons were not created as figures we now identify as demonic. For God made nothing bad. They were made good, but falling from the heavenly wisdom and thereafter wandering around the earth, they deceived the Greeks. And here the word Greek is intended as a reference to all who follow things such as astrology, the occult, philosophy, and other things over Christ. Through apparitions, envious of us Christians, they meddled with all things in their desire to frustrate our journey into heaven, so that we might not ascend to the place from which they fell. So he says the demons were created good by God, but then they fell. And when they fell, they are demons, which were angels before, and they were able to tempt us and try us here on earth. But they're not humans that have died and their ghosts are coming back. And he says that they did this to frustrate our going to heaven, which was the place from which they fell. So basically they wanted, you know, because they fell, they wanted to take everybody else with them. The Lord here, let's make it clear that the Lord may permit legitimate... There's too much talking up down here, guys. I need you to look at me, not your neighbor, okay? Please. The Lord may permit legitimate apparitions of His saints, okay? The Lord may permit apparitions of His saints. Like we see many stories of the appearance of Baba Krollos, Merimina, and so on, and all of these saints, right? And even in the 60s, we know of the apparition of Saint Mary in Zaytun. And listen to what, after the crucifixion, or after Christ died on the cross, listen to what Matthew says in Matthew 27. He says, "And the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised, and coming out of the graves after His resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many." So, two things to note, that after the resurrection is when they appeared, right? When Christ died is when the graves were opened, then after the resurrection they appeared. And who are the ones that appeared? The saints, right? So the saints weren't coming to haunt the people, but to witness to the resurrection, right? So it wasn't, this is not ghosts, but now these are the spirits of the saints to witness to the resurrection at the time. So that way, you have the witness of heaven by these souls, you have the empty tomb of Christ, and you have the witness of the apostles and those who were there. So heaven and earth witness to the resurrection. And of course, we hear in the story of Saint Anthony where he wrestled with the demons, right? And of course, this was given to us so that we can read his story and look at the perfection, at a person who excelled in fighting the demons and overcoming the demons through his prayer and humility. So what is the difference between legitimate apparitions and ghosts? I want somebody to tell me. What's the difference between a legitimate apparition and a ghost? To Christ. Right, very good. So the ghosts are coming to haunt, but the legitimate apparitions are come to instill hope in the believers and faith, right? Big difference. So I'll close with some dangers of participating in Halloween. Number one, one of the dangers, or the first danger, is changing the name of evil and sin. Listen to what Isaiah says. "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." So to get around this, people will change the name of Halloween. They'll say, okay, we're going to name it All Saints Day. We're going to name it Harvest Festival. We're going to name it any feast, Fall Festival. All of these things you'll find in the schools. They're going to change the name so it doesn't offend anybody. But does changing the name of a pagan or evil festival make it acceptable? Does simply change the name make it acceptable? If you think about it, why would we need to take a pagan festival, something like this? We have our own festivals, right? If you're talking about wanting to celebrate the victory over death, we have the resurrection. If you want to talk about celebrating the saints who have preceded us in victory and in martyrdom, what feast do we have that we celebrate all the martyrs? Nowruz, right? Nowruz is the year of the martyrs. That's why it's different, because we started this calendar at the end of the age of martyrdom, right? So we call it the year of the martyrs. So Nowruz would be a great time for us to dress up as our favorite saint, right? And to celebrate the lives of these righteous men and women who had preceded us. If the root of a tree is evil, no matter how I make the bushes look, it's still going to be evil. So if I have like an apple tree, right, and I cut it and trim it to look like a pear tree, does it make it a pear tree? No. What if I have this apple tree and I take off all the apples and I super glue oranges to it? Does it make it an orange tree? No. So replacing the fruit, changing how it looks, doesn't make it something good. So if the roots are evil, then the whole thing is evil. This is what the Lord was saying. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. You will know them by their fruit. So even if we didn't know anything about the origins of Halloween, we could look at the fruits. Even if all of what I said about the history of Halloween is in question and might be wrong, but I look at the today practices that's going on, I can judge this and say, is this something from God or something from paganism or Satan? The second danger is normalization or desensitization of sin. Making sin normal, common, okay. Desensitizing us is when, you know, I might be taken back in the beginning, and then after constant exposure, I become okay with it. It's just like maybe for somebody, as they're going through school, they notice their friends cussing. Maybe the first time I heard a curse word in school, it was repulsive, right? I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that person did this, right? But then as you listen, everybody's cursing around you, then by the time you get to high school, you feel like, this is desensitization. And this is the danger of this holiday, is it desensitizes us towards sin. Philosopher once said, the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. The greatest trick the devil pulled was he convinced the world that he didn't exist. Why? Because then he can attack us without us blaming him. It's just like the hunter who goes to hunt wearing the camouflage, and as long as the deer doesn't see him, it's very easy for him to kill the deer. But if he's wearing like bright colors, oh, the deer will spot him and run, make his job much more difficult. So Satan works the same way. The Bible tells us that Satan is like a lion prowling around seeking whom he may devour. He wants to devour all of us. So if we say he's not there, then it's very easy for him. So when we train our children, or when the society trains their children to dress up as these, you know, kids, and they make light of it, make fun of it, then this tells us that all of the demonic realm is fairy tale. This is precisely what he wants. But we, you and I know, Yanni, that the demonic realm is no fairy tale. And we can just look at the world outside us and see the corruption, the sadness, the lack of peace, and the tribulation and depression, suicide, and all of these things in the world, and say certainly this is valid. The presence of an enemy is evident. The third danger is the phrase, it's innocent fun. It's just innocent fun. If we agree that nothing in Halloween tradition and celebration brings glory to God, so if we can agree upon this, that if you look out, nothing there brings glory to God. Agreed? Agreed. Then how do I justify calling something opposing God to be fun? If I'm classifying something opposing God to be fun, that's a bit frightening. Because in the day of judgment when I come, am I going to look at this side that's away from God and say I want to be there because it's fun? We've got to ask ourselves that question. If it's about collecting candy and wearing costumes, as I said, this can be done on godly occasions, like Eid and Nowruz and so on. Listen to what St. Paul tells the people of Thessalonica. He tells them, number one, test all things. Don't just go with the flow. Test all things. See where they came from. See whether the practice now glorifies God or doesn't. Test them. Number two, hold fast to what is good. Very clear. Is this good? No. Are scaring people good? No. You know, now when you go to the theme parks tonight, they have the whole theme parks. I don't know, maybe you don't have many here, but in Florida, all of the theme parks were all like haunted houses. In Busch Gardens, they would have people, their workers, that would hide and try to scare you. And this was part of the night. And people got hurt from this. People got hurt from this. So, hold fast to what is good. And then he says, abstain from every form of evil. He doesn't say abstain from every evil, but every what? every form of evil. In Arabic, it's kul shibha shar. Anything that resembles or likens evil. If it smells like evil, it's evil. Get away from it. Right? And you know, there are many people that try these Ouija boards and these different things of divination and going to fortune tellers. All of these are sinful. And a long time ago when I was reading about like a demon possession, oftentimes this is how it happened. When they were doing these Ouija board and calling upon mediums to talk to the dead. So this is a form of evil. We should stay away from this by any means. Number four, the fourth danger, I'll get your questions at the end, hold on to them. The fourth danger is the feeling of depravity. And what I mean by this is when we say, why deprive our children from such a popular social experience? Why deprive our kids? Our kids shouldn't be deprived of this. To this, I'll ask two questions. The first one, what is the role of Christian living in this world? Why are we here? Very shortly, I'll answer my own question. Very shortly, it's given to us in Matthew 5. The Lord says, you are the light of the world. Let your light so shine before men that what? May see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So our job here on earth is to be a light to the world so that the world might see our light and glorify who? Glorify God. So does participating in Halloween fulfill this? Am I going to allow my children to hide their light under a basket so they can wear a costume and collect candy? The second question is, what is the goal of raising children? Simply put, it's to make children of God. If my goal as a parent is to make children of God, then having them participate in evil and pagan practices certainly is no way to fulfill this, right? But bringing them here tonight, like all of you are here tonight, this is the step in the right direction. So if living means that we will not be accepted by society, this should be a price we should gladly pay. If living this way in depravity and not allowing our kids to participate in these things is the price we have to pay, so be it. So what? Listen, look what our forefathers, especially in our church, given that our forefathers did not only accept social injustice, and not only our forefathers, but our brethren who are in Egypt till today, right, are living with social injustice. Not only that, but those who gave their life for the faith and for their love for God. What is my inconvenience of being deprived from a pagan holiday? If we want to even begin to just meditate on the life of martyrdom, it begins by depravity, depriving ourselves from the evil things of the world. The last point I'd like to make is, or the warn you about, is the participation. That participation is approval. Participation is approval. Let me let you read this part, and I mentioned it to a lot of you, and it's very enlightening and frightening at the same time. St. Paul in Romans, he was speaking to the Gentiles and the Jews in Rome, the non-believers and the believers. Chapter 1 dealt with the non-believers, the Greeks, the Romans, the people like the Celts and so on. And listen to what he says. He says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They were worshippers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, discerning, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, and that those who practice such things are deserving of death. Those who practice such things are deserving of death, comma. There's more. What's more? He says, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice. So those who approve of those who practice, according to St. Paul, are worthy of death. So if I approve of an evil practice, it's as if I'm categorized in God's eyes as if I practice them. We have to be very careful, my beloved, on how what we approve in our society. If I listen to music that has profane language in it, or watch television shows that display homosexual couples or obscene images or shows, what do you think this does? Or what do you think this tells the producers? Huh? To stop producing them? إخس علينا? No. They're going to produce it more. This is what the people like. Let's give them what they like so at the end of the day they can make more money. So they're preying off of your sin so they can make more money. So we have to be very cautious in what we approve. The things we approve, the things we allow ourselves to be around and exposed to and consume, this is what we approve. And if we approve of them, we are worthy the same penalty or the same consequence as those who do them. This not only goes for Halloween, but across the board. Glory be to God forever and ever. Amen.